This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Donald Trump announced his desire for a new American holiday in a recent campaign tantrum. This was sparked by comments Joe Biden made on Easter Sunday, which also fell on Transgender Visibility Day this year.
What the hell was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day? Such total disrespect to Christians, and November 5th is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody has ever seen before. Let's call it Christian Visibility Day, all right?
The last time Trump won the race for the White House, Christian voters, particularly evangelicals, motivated by his running mate Mike Pence, played a huge part in his win. Clearly, he's trying to double down on the Christian vote again this time out, but will that work? I'm Jacob Jarvis, and joining me in the bunker to discuss this is Washington Post national columnist Philip Bump. Hello, Philip.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Are you?
Good. I'm fine.
Good. So those comments from Trump, do they represent his true feelings, or was this just an opportunity for him to wade into the culture war and to suggest Biden is on the opposite side of the culture war to him, basically, and that's pretty much all he's attempting to do there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's important to recognize that when we talk about Donald Trump's relationship with the religious right, that this is something that he has put a very heavy focus on, not just in 2020, but in 2016. Back in 2016, several months before the actual election, he went to a Christian college in Iowa and made a pledge that he was going to be the fighter for Christianity once he got to the White House. You're going to need lobbyists, he said, because he was going to be the voice of Christianity. He is not himself a religious person. You know, during the 2016 campaign, he'd said he was affiliated with some church in Manhattan, and a church released a statement saying, you know, we've never seen this guy, essentially. You know, he's not part of this. And he's understood, you know, his supporters understand he's not a religious person, but he is someone who very fervently advocates for those issues, specifically to pander to religious conservatives. And they recognize that and they appreciate that. And so this issue of Trans Visibility Day falling on Easter, which is, as you know, just purely coincidental, this is absolutely opportunistic. And I don't think anyone sees it as anything other than opportunistic. And, you know, he doesn't really think it's going to be a national holiday. He's just basically saying, you need to come out and vote on November 5th. You need to come out and vote on Election Day to have Christianity be visible in that I will win and Christianity will then be triumphant. That's his argument. And it is of a piece with everything he said all along, which is, look, we're making a deal here. He's not saying this explicitly, obviously, but he, you know, we're making a deal. I am going to advocate for you and you're going to vote for me and everyone's going to be happy.
When it comes to the issues which people like Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis and some of those, say, more right-wing MAGA-style Republicans have been talking about, gender is clearly high up on their chain of what they are seeing as issues. But is actually, when it comes to what voters' priorities are, is something like religion actually more prescient to more people? And is that part of the reason for wanting to maybe combine these two issues to sort of widen the net and the way that they're attempting to draw voters in?
No, I mean, I don't think this is at all really an attempt to widen the net. It is instead to try and amplify things that the right is concerned about, right? So one of the approaches that really propelled Trump to the White House in 2016, and this is something that actually had been advocated by Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, prior, was that the challenge Republicans were having wasn't that they were not doing a good enough job appealing to swing voters. It was that they weren't doing a good enough job appealing to the fringe right of their base. Mm. And so when you have someone like Mitt Romney in 2012, the idea among Republicans was, look, we need to find someone who sits in towards the middle and we can get, you know, peel away some swing voters and, you know, win states that way. Cruz's idea was, and this ended up being enacted by Donald Trump, was, no, what we need to do instead is get the far right, which is disengaged and thinks the Republican establishment is out of touch and doesn't know what's going on. We need to get them involved. We need to bring them to the polls. And Trump was very good at that. And a large part of that was people who are motivated by fringe right culture war issues and religious issues, of which there's a lot of overlap. So, you know, Christian evangelicals are a very conservative part of the electorate, and they were absolutely essential to Donald Trump's victory in 2016 and his support in 2020. But this idea of talking about trans issues isn't really about appealing to religious voters or anything like that, or even trying to, you know, get more moderate or swing voters, which it's certainly not going to do. It is instead trying to play up these culture war issues and reinforce this idea that Joe Biden, the Democrats, are trying to destroy basic American cultural values, and we need to stand up to them. That's the pitch that's being made, and that overlaps then with the religiosity.
So has it taken a new step in sort of a victimhood mentality from Trump and for his supporters in sort of indicating that they are the victims who have been, they're being quashed by some sort of overreaching leftist organization that's in the White House?
Yeah, I mean, this is a central part of Trump's appeal. Absolutely. This idea that there are these enormous grievances that the previously advantaged populations of the United States, specifically whites and Christians, are now being disadvantaged. And there's actually polling from YouGov and others that shows that white Republicans in particular think whites face more discrimination than black people, or, you know, Christians face more discrimination than Jewish people. Like, there are all these manifestations of this sense on the right that they are aggrieved, that they are under threat, that they are under fire. And, you know, part of this, and I wrote a book that came out last year that looks at this as being part of the fact that for so long, there was this huge baby boom in the United States and the UK and other places immediately after World War II, lasted a couple decades, and built this huge population of very heavily white people, had a shared set of values. And now we see in the United States in particular, we see an emerging demographic minority, which is not white and has different values, and it emerged in a different, you know, cultural period that is challenging those people for power. And so Donald Trump came along at a point in which older white Republican Americans were feeling very embattled because the America that they knew and dominated, either tacitly or explicitly for so long, was now being threatened by these other groups that in many cases literally didn't look like them and didn't hold their religious values in the same way. And Donald Trump was very much able to play into that. And it's really the core. And, you know, his campaign slogan was "Make America Great Again." What are you referring to? You're referring to a time previously when America was great, a change from the modern moment in which we live.
So Trump has previously likened himself to Jesus. And you spoke about some of the more fringe right characters that they want to appeal to. Some of them have genuinely suggested that Trump has been chosen by God. Is that as much of a fringe belief as I would expect it to be? Or is there actually a larger cohort and demographic that believe that, who he does need to, if he wants a chance of winning, need to appeal to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely a subset which believes that there was the hand of God that came down and, you know, anointed Donald Trump as the person who could make these things occur. I think there are more people who have a more moderate view of that, which is that they believe that God is the driver of all things that happened, and Trump happened, and Trump is beneficial, ergo, we see God's hand. You know, I mean, it's sort of a subtle distinction there, but I think that distinction does exist. And some people just say, you know, oh, like, thank God that Donald Trump is president, right? You know, that's sort of, you know, sort of a step beyond that. But I think that most Republicans view Donald Trump probably as enacting their will, and that will may be religious in nature, and it may be with God's approval. But I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, sort of the Old Testament God, you know, making something happen in the way that some of his most extreme supporters do.
Trump, to me, often feels like quite a blunt political weapon and blunt communicator. And so when it comes to appealing to the Christian voters, he's very much able to say big things like this, like, let's have a new Christian holiday and speak about how important Christianity is. But is there anything more specific and tangible from him that he's doing to appeal to Christian voters, other than just saying, hey, I'm going to look out for Christian voters, please back me?
Oh, yeah, sure. Abortion, right? I mean, abortion's the big issue right now in the United States. And, you know, Donald Trump came into office and had a Supreme Court seat held open for him by the Republican majority in the Senate, and was able to appoint three people to the Supreme Court. And he did so explicitly with an eye toward overpeeling Roe versus Wade, which was the Supreme Court decision which allowed abortion in the United States, and it got overturned. And Donald Trump, you know, he has this way of talking about politics that his supporters understand what he's saying in one way, and his detractors understand it in a different way. And sort of doing that on abortion, he's sort of winking, talking about states and, you know, blah, 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 in a way that for people who are, you know, willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, will say, well, it's not really clear how he stands on abortion, but his core base of supporters are like, yes, we get it. He's, you know, he supports having a national ban on abortion. And I think fundamentally, Donald Trump, who used to be pro-choice, you know, and accepted that women had the right to have an abortion if they felt they needed to, you know, that it's opportunistic for him. But there are other issues like that, you know, that he advocates, for example, on allowing churches to be explicitly political, which they aren't currently because churches are tax exempt. And if you're a tax exempt organization, you're not allowed to, you know, do political activism because the government doesn't want to fund political activism. But he's saying that churches should be allowed to do that. They should be allowed to be explicitly political and, you know, do endorsements and still maintain their tax exempt status. So there are things that this is not Donald Trump, you know, sitting down and thinking, you know, what's best for the religious community. It is instead the religious community coming to Donald Trump and saying, these are the things that are important to us, particularly religious leaders. And he's then saying, right, sure, fine, okay, I'll advocate for that because he doesn't care. And, yeah, you know, he's not a religious person. It's not really important to him. But what's important to him is maintaining power and winning votes. And so he does what he has to do in order to you know, build that loyalty from that base, which he's been very good at.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Zoning out away from Trump slightly, but on the Christian vote generally, how big is the Christian vote? And I suppose, can we lump that as one singular cohort? Is that perhaps also a mistake to suggest just the Christian vote is one massive blob?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It is not one massive blob, and that, you know, most Americans are Christian. That has declined pretty substantially in recent decades, but most Americans are still Christian. And in the most recent election, presidential election in 2020, that vote went slightly for Donald Trump by about a 10-point margin, if I'm remembering correctly. Among those who weren't Christian, Joe Biden won by about a 2-to-1 margin. You know, particularly as new research came out from Pew Research Center yesterday, which showed that atheists in the United States, of whom there are a growing number, are very, very heavily Democratic relative to partisanship. So it is not the case. When Donald Trump, for example, talks about how Election Day is going to be Christian Visibility Day, he's sort of talking about Christianity in the same way that he, after the 2016 election, talked about women. He said, for example, at the time, you know, women were a huge part of my victory. Well, it's not true. White women were, right? But he, you know, he was talking about this subgroup, which is strongly supportive of him, as though that was representative of the whole group. He's doing the same thing here with Christians. White evangelical Protestants are overwhelmingly supportive of Donald Trump, but that's not all Christians in the United States, and not all Christians in the United States support his candidacy.
Looking at his support among Christians at the moment, you mentioned that it was slightly weighted in his favor when it came to that election. Has it changed from then? Did it change in 2020, and has it changed to now?
Not substantially, no. You know, a big chunk of his support in both 2016 and 2020 is white evangelical Protestants. Now we have early polling. This is a really weird election cycle because, you know, both candidates are unpopular, which is, you know, the only other time that's happened in recent memory is 2016. We have this, you know, third party candidate and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, you know, if he gets on the ballot, could mix things up. We also have the fact that this is a rerun from 2020. And so there are probably going to be a lot of Americans who are tuned out. I'm really loath to make a lot of predictions about what happens here. I will say this, there's no sign that Joe Biden's making significant inroads with white evangelical Protestants. There are signs that he is doing about as well as he did 4 years ago with other religious groups, including from this new Pew data. So I don't think anything substantial has changed. And I think what Donald Trump is doing is, again, what, you know, that Ted Cruz strategy from 8 years ago, which is just trying to do everything in his power to convince evangelical voters they need to come out and vote. He just wants to do everything in his power to heighten the sense that this is a moment of potential collapse for the United States and that his voters need to come out and prevent that.
Is this another example of voter groups where it seems to me a lot of voters in the US are quite stagnant at the moment, and levels of support for both Trump and Biden seem to float around similar levels? When it comes to the Christian vote, it feels hard for me that Trump would be able to criticize Biden particularly effectively, because Biden is Catholic and seems quite devoutly Christian as far as I can tell, probably more so and more sincerely feeling than Donald Trump has ever felt in when it comes to Christianity. But there are evangelicals who their mind are made up on Trump and that's how they feel. And then there's a chunk of other people who they're kind of made up on Biden. So is it quite hard for either one of them, when you zone down on this demographic, and perhaps this applies to other demographics, they're trying to run a campaign of doubling down on them, but everyone's sort of quite set at the moment anyway?
Yeah, I think that's generally true, that there's not a lot of movement. There has been a lot of attention paid to polling, which looks at Black voters and Hispanic voters and young voters in particular seem to be more receptive to Donald Trump's pitch than they have been in the past. There's a lot of attention being paid to that, but those are still fairly modest changes that we're seeing in the polling at this point in time, depending on the poll you're looking at. But you're right, yes, that it is not like there is a hard-fought battle among religious groups, that there's a lot of swing voters in there. And you're also very right that Joe Biden is a much more religious person than is Donald Trump. I mean, I've seen him go to the church that he goes to in Delaware near his home that he goes to regularly every week, I think, where his first wife and his son are buried. You know, this is a central part of who he is, but this is very easily framed, particularly with the help of the right-wing media universe that exists here. It's very easily framed as Joe Biden, not being particularly religious or being insincere, whereas, Donald Trump is the hammer of God, if you will, that he is the person who is affecting the change that religious conservatives want to see. And therefore, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Joe Biden is a devout Catholic, if he's doing the things that they think are detrimental to them, from a religious standpoint. And so that's the framework that exists.
Could this swing Trump's running mate pick again? Do you feel like, obviously, Mike Pence was a very calculated decision in terms of picking up evangelicals. Will Trump, if he's going to pursue this sort of policy, if you want to call it that, might he try and pick someone else who perhaps does appear more piously religious than he ever has?
Yeah, I don't think he cares about that anymore. I mean, I do think that the Pence choice was in part because Pence had those bona fides with the religious right, but I don't think he thinks he needs them. And I think he's right. I don't know if there's anyone he could pick to lose the support of evangelical Christians. And so, as such, I don't think there's anyone he needs to pick to bolster his support with them. The religious vote to which he's trying to appeal is solidly with him already. So I think that whoever his vice presidential pick is going to be, it'll be someone potentially focused on doing better with women, potentially focused on doing better with non-white voters. And I don't think he's going to, look at it through the lens of religion.
Are there any particular states where this might impact the vote a little bit more than the country generally?
One of the states that's been interesting to watch over the course of Donald Trump's tenure in national politics is Utah. So Utah, as people may know, is a state that has a lot of members of the Church of Latter-day Saints, which it's better known as Mormonism. Utah was, in 2016, one of the states that swung the hardest to the left among states that voted for Republicans. In part, that was because in 2012, Mitt Romney, who is Mormon, was on the ballot. But in part, it was because Utah was pretty consistently skeptical of Donald Trump because, Latter-day Saints have a very different religious worldview than do evangelical Protestants. And so they saw Trump differently. They didn't see him in the same way that other religious groups did. That softened in 2020. Utah shifted a little bit in 2020 to the right and more favorably towards Trump. And since then, we've seen, for example, State Senator Mike Lee become very fervently pro-Trump. We've seen Mitt Romney announcing that he's, he no longer wants to be a senator from the state of Utah after having won election there. So Utah is interesting because it shows, I think, and we'll see what happens in 2024. I mean, it's going to be red either way. It was always going to vote for Trump. But it's going to be interesting to see the extent to which the barriers to Trump that existed among a lot of Utahns have eroded. That there was skepticism about him, often centered in his religious presentations, that by now is very heavily eroded, if not completely gone. So that's a state that's going to be interesting to watch. Beyond that, you know, the overlap between white Christians and Trump support has been very robustly demonstrated. PRRI had some great data on this a year or two ago. The more white Christians you have in your county, the more your county votes for Donald Trump. And so, you know, what that means then is that given the fact that nothing has obviously changed in the electorate, no, nothing has obviously changed in terms of how white Christians look at Donald Trump broadly, that's still going to be a good predictor. And that means the same places that were pretty heavily pro-Trump in 2020 will be in 2024. And once again, for the third straight cycle, this will be an election sort of won at the margins. And it, you know, it comes down to a few counties and a few states as to who the next president will be.
You suggested that there's no running mate that Trump could pick that would make him lose support potentially around evangelicals. If I were, say, a devout American Christian and I saw the way that Trump was speaking, I would be slowly starting to see it as more and more obviously cynical, which would make me maybe not want to vote for him. But am I perhaps being naive in that both sides of this know that it's cynical? They know that Trump has been cynical to get them, and everyone who knows they've been appealed to goes, you know what, he's probably not a very nice person, but at the end of the day, he said he'll do a couple of things I like, so I don't care, I'm going to vote cynically back.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of been the deal since 2016, right? That everyone, you know, even before he became the front runner, everyone knew who he was. You know, he's been married 3 times. He has kids from 3 different wives. He was credibly accused not only of having extramarital affairs, but of sexually assaulting women. He has been since convicted of rape, you know, in a civil trial in New York State. Like, there are all of these manifestations of who he is that are at obvious odds with what one would expect from religious conservatives, but it has always been the case. And while they do give him the benefit of the doubt on religion more than he deserves, I don't think there are a lot of Donald Trump supporters who are religious conservatives who really believe deep down inside that he is a devout Christian who really spends a lot of time reading the Bible and thinking about God. And they just, exactly as you say, you know, if the worst person in the world offered to give you $1 billion, you know, you'd be tempted to take the $1 billion, right? Like, you know, and when, you know, no matter how you feel about someone, if they are delivering for you the power that you feel you need at the federal level, maybe that's who you're going to support.
Philip, thank you so much for your time today.
Of course, my pleasure.
And thanks to you for listening to The Bunker. If you'd like to support our efforts, remember you can support us on Patreon. For £3 a month, you'll get all of our episodes ad-free and early. Search Bunker Patreon Podcast to find out how, or follow the link in the show notes. I'm Jacob Jarvis. Thank you for listening to The Bunker.
The Bunker USA was written and presented by Podmasters Managing Editor Jacob Jarvis. The producer was Chris Jones, with audio production by me, Simon Williams, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. Music is by Kenny Dickinson and artwork is by James Parrott. The Bunker USA is a Podmasters production.